On page 221, 222, in the Hebrew, it is 11 lines from the bottom. After the chuluv is raya v'oizen shemas chuluv, we're starting with gam. And in the English, it starts probably at, and also, or even though he has no form of a body. Mm-hmm. Okay? So we're talking about das, and we're talking about how everybody has das, and how this das is latent within us, and from this das we can develop at least a lower level of fear, which just answers the question, yes, to Moshe Rabbeinu, fear is an easy thing, because you're talking about this innate, quote-unquote, Moshe, which is inside each and every single one of us, which this provides the impetus for this lower level of fear, which is based on Hashem watching. Now, it doesn't mean that we're afraid that Hashem is going to smack us. That's not our level of lower level of fear. But it's kind of embarrassing when you think about it, if you're going to do something wrong and somebody's standing there watching you. So you're not going to do it, not because you're afraid of the person. It's just that you have enough morals in your own mind to not do something wrong when somebody's watching.
Yeah.
So now he's going to analyze his last statement just briefly, and he says, "V'gam ki ein lo demusa guf," even though Hashem has no body. So how is it you're supposed to imagine that Hashem's got ears that sees, ears that hear, and eyes that see, and everything's written down in a book, when we don't believe in the old man sitting on the throne business?
Mm-hmm.
Hashem is not spatial, so yet we describe it, and this is taken from the Mishnah, as a certain spatiality. So he says, it's only just as an allegory, mm-hmm. at best. Because he says, Hare adrabah hakol galuva yidu alufana b'yeser seis la'ein keith mariyasa ayin shmiyasa alayzen. He says, the eyes and ears is actually a very bad example, because an eye can only perceive so much and an ear can only hear so much. But Hashem is well beyond eyes and ears. It's like a person knows and feels himself. The example of Das that we gave last week with the story of the Volper, if you recall. The person who said, how could he remember such a thing after 30 years? He says, how do you remember where your head is the next morning when you wake up? So he says, use this as an example. It says, just like it is that a person knows himself. No one has to tell you where your hands are. You know exactly where they are. You know if anything's happening to them. You happen to notice, by the way, that if you happen to be sticking them sort of like on a fire or something like that, somehow you're going to know really fast that your hand is being burned. You don't have to like sit there and think about it. Like cold or hot. Even if it's like, for example, a person's little toenail is getting burnt. Because a little toenail is the furthest part of your body from your brain. It doesn't take a whole lot for the person to realize that there's something going on with their toenail. Right. Even though it's at the end of their body, they know it. Because there's a direct connection between the brain and the little toenail. And so that little direct connection makes it such that a person automatically knows about it without having to think about it. If, for example, he says to the person he happens to burn it in fire. So it is, and anything that happens in a person to this body, so he has this like seeing eye, this understanding in his brain that Baruch Hashem, we're programmed that if something is happening to our body which might be injurious, we know enough to stop.
Get away.
Hopefully, isn't it?
Yeah.
Okay. And it doesn't have to be, there's no process involved. You might call it a reflex. that if a person puts his hand on something hot, they automatically pull it back. The expression yad tselet is bo, that the hand jumps back, is removed back from the item. That's the maximum amount temperature. Of heat, temperature for heat that it would be right. considered okay to cook would be yad tselet is bo. If it's yad tselet is bo, you're not allowed to cook. If it's less than yad tselet is bo, then you could put things on it mm-hmm. or put things into it. Okay, why? Because it's not called cooking, because it's not hot enough.
Right.
So, this expression of yad tselet is bo doesn't mean your hand. It means the hand of a little baby.
Ooh, interesting.
Because your hands have calluses on them.
Not sensitive at all.
Yeah, you lose your sensitivity over periods of time. Mm-hmm. You know, you get used to it, how many times you've done things to your hands. So yad tselet is bo for an adult could be as much as 5-6 degrees hotter than the term yad tselet is bo. Wow. There was there's a whole debate among poskim, I think back in like the, I'm not sure if it was the 1940s, somewhere in the 1940s, 1960s, mm-hmm. as to the terms yad tselet is bo. Because one of the rabbis was saying, well, this is what it takes for my hand to be pulled back from it. They said, of course, that's way too hot. It's like 110 degrees. Mm-hmm. 110 degrees is for sure yad tselet is bo. It's more like, we're talking Fahrenheit, it's more like 106. Because a little baby is going to pull its hand back at 106, whereas you and I are not going to pull our hands back till 110. Mm. Okay? So, We're not engaging ourselves to pull our hand back.
Right.
We're not putting our hand down saying, you know, that thing is hot. I really need to move my hand from there. Because if that would be the case, by that time you've got a third degree burn going on your hand.
Exactly.
Okay? So rather we immediately pull it back because there's an instantaneous connection going on between the hand and the brain. That's called knowledge of what's going on in your hand. It doesn't. It's not something which involves an intellectual process. This is not something that a person has to learn, because as you said, little babies will know that you have to pull your hand back. Okay, it's an automatic knowledge. So he says. So it is a Yodei Hakadosh Baruch Hu Kol Nifol B'Chol Hanivroim Al Yonim V'Tachtonim. Hashem, in the same way, knows every organism in the supernal realms and the terrestrial realms. Hashem has this direct connection. It's more than a familiarity, because you use the expression "kayach ha'poel benifol" is one of those Hasidic catchphrases, that the power of the effector is in the affected constantly. Since the power of the effector, meaning Hashem, right. is in the affected, meaning the creation.
Okay.
Constantly enlivening it and every instance. And it's this direct involvement, which he will talk about at great length when we get to Shaar Yichud V'Emunah, which creates the relationship of the world and Hashem, between the world and Hashem. And he wants to say, he's going to, as soon as we turn the page, he's just going to negate the whole thing also, this paradigm. Because any example you're going to give doesn't work. There's always going to be pitfalls for it, because Hashem is beyond any type of limitations. And we're trying to give a mashal, which a mashal by definition has limitations. So you can't really apply every detail of the example to the exemplified. And as in this case, he's going to say right now. So he says now, so how is it that Hashem has a relationship with them? Everything receives their nurture from Hashem, mm-hmm. as we quote the verse, because everything is from you. Mm-hmm. As it says, nothing form can ever be forgotten by you. Mm-hmm. Hashem never loses his car keys. Hashem doesn't have any car keys, but anyway,
that's a fact. I feel better because I'm pretty dry.
Yeah, exactly. I'm sure there's a joke there, something.
I'm sure, yeah.
You know, the, I don't know, there must be some brand name of a car or model of a car that someone would say, you know.
Yes.
You know, so, I don't know. He drives a Thunderbird.
Yeah.
No, we could get really bad.
Yeah.
Anyway. As the Rambam writes, and also the sages of the Kabbalah agree. This is Kamosha Kazab al Ramak Bapardes. This is the Ramak brings down on the Pardes, and this is the allegory of the relation, the fight between the Chaykrim and the Mekubalim, as to if you could say that Hashem is the Mada, the knowledge, the knower, the known, or whether Hashem is much higher. So he mentions that four times in four different notes in Tanya, and in this one parenthesis here in chapter 42. Shividias atzma kiviyachol yoyde kol anivrayim animsayim me'amitis hamatzoy. Quoting the Rambam, he says that when Hashem knows himself, so to speak, and the Rambam himself uses the word kiviyachol, because Hashem is not, it's just jargon that we can, verbiage that we put out there so that we can understand how this whole thing is flying.
Right.
But it's not happening like this at all.
Right.
That Hashem, knowing himself, knows all creatures. As I, when I say I know myself, so what part of myself am I knowing? Since I know my essence, I know everything that my essence affects, and automatically. So Hashem, knowing his essence, knows everything that's going to possibly come out from Hashem's essence, meaning all creatures that exist from Hashem's true existence. Hashem is the true existence, meaning true existence means that Hashem is the only existence that has to exist, because it always did exist and always will exist. Everything else isn't emes, because everything else has a starting point, and therefore, since it has a starting point, that means that it wasn't always was. And since it wasn't always was, that means it's not true, because truth means it always has to have been, always is, and always will be. So this thing wasn't always. It has a starting point, so therefore it's not true. Only Hashem's essence is amitis hamotzei, the true existence, as the Rambam explains. So, and that's how it says, this is the end of the example. And that's how it is that we will use the expression that a person should develop a level of baseline fear, because his knowing that Hashem relates to him intimately. Mm. It's not to say that Hashem's up in a big throne and he's writing down in a book that this person's going to deserve to get smacked for what he's doing.
Yeah.
No. It's a realization that my existence is because of Hashem enlivening me right now. And since it is that Hashem is enlivening me right now, that means that there is a nurture which is coming directly from Hashem's essence to me. And how could it possibly be, knowing that Hashem is actively involved in creating me right this second, that means Hashem's paying attention to what I'm doing because he's enlivening me, that I'm going to do something wrong? That's a much more powerful statement than saying eyes that sees, ears that hears. Because when you say eyes that sees, hear, and ears that hear,
there's a disconnect.
Yeah, that means it's over there someplace.
Right.
I can see and hear you without having to be sitting on your lap. Okay, I can hear you very far away if it happens to be.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, but like this that I'm saying, that we're saying, the Alter Rebbe says that Hashem is actively involved in the person's existence right now, and is creating that person the way the person should be created right now, that realization is going to bring about what we're going to call Yirat Tata. That's the lower level of fear of Hashem. So now you can talk and ask a question. This always comes up, and it comes up in various and sundry ways, and there really is no answer to it. And the more you talk about it, the more you're going to paint yourself into a corner. Is, what about the idea of freedom of choice? Really, if you think about it, we don't have a whole lot of freedom of choice.
Correct.
even though, especially, you know, we know the statement that Hakol bidei shemayim chutz miyir shemayim. Everything is in the hands of heaven except for your fear of heaven. Okay, so that narrows it right down to our ability to performing or not performing the 613 commandments.
Right.
That's the only thing that we have freedom of choice. The fact that you decided you're going to wear a blue shirt today, a gray shirt, a white shirt, that was all preordained. You have no choice in that, even though you went to the closet and you said, oh, brown shoes, I don't think blue shirt's going to go today. Okay, right. You could have done that. But right. Me not understanding why you can't wear brown and blue together, I might have worn brown and blue. Okay, but that would have also been Hashgacha Pratis. Okay, but it's an interesting thing in that vein. My wife would never wear brown and blue together because she knows art. So the situation would never present itself to her where she would be wearing brown and blue. It's a bad example. I give the example rather of right now, do we have the freedom of choice not to eat a ham sandwich? You could say, I have the freedom of choice. God gave me, I'll hold me this shemayim, puts me your shemayim. So I have the freedom of choice not to eat a ham sandwich. Okay, where's the ham sandwich you're not eating?
It's not here.
So how could you possibly eat a ham sandwich if it's not here? You don't have the choice of eating a ham sandwich in my house because there are no ham sandwiches.
Correct.
Okay, it's only if the Hashem would put you in a place where there happens to be a ham sandwich, now you could exercise your freedom of choice if you're going to eat the ham sandwich or not eat the ham sandwich. So how much free choice do we really have then? It's Hashem is deciding what we're going to have free choice to choose from.
Correct.
Okay, because Hashem is the one, we say, Hamechem Yitzadei Gavar, Hashem directs the footsteps of man, every morning our morning brachas. Don't bring us to a test.
Don't bring it to temptation or iniquity.
Right. Don't put us in those situations.
Yeah.
And the Alter Rebbe says in Tanya a bunch of times, you have a person who thinks he's doing really well, he's a real banani.
Yeah.
But what is he doing? He's got himself cloistered away, and he's locked up to his eyeballs in books, and all he sees all day long is holy stuff.
Yeah.
And he's never faced with temptation. So he imagines in his own mind that he's a real holy dude.
Yeah.
And in a way, you might say he is, because Hashem has given him that opportunity to afford himself, to cloister himself away, so that he's not put into a situation. What would be if you take this very same person and you stick him on the street? What's he going to do now? Hashem is not testing that person. So we know this statement, I think I mentioned it last week or the week before, with Rashi and the lady riding the horse. Did I mention that a couple of weeks ago?
No.
You know what I'm talking about?
Last week, yes.
No, it wasn't. Rashi, who lived in the 900s in Alsace-Lorraine, which is western Germany, eastern France, depending on what week it was, saw a noblewoman, a Laurentian noblewoman, riding towards him on a horse. And she was riding it straight. I don't know what you call, I'm not familiar. English, I think they call it, yeah?
Yeah.
She's riding with one leg on each side of the horse, rather than side saddle.
Right.
And he was deeply disturbed by having to witness this grievous act of immorality. I can imagine in the 900s what this woman was wearing was probably long skirts with petticoats, with all kinds of tights, things going on over there. And if he didn't actually see any of her body, but what he may have seen was the outline of her legs. That's what he might most likely saw. And he was bothered by this act of immorality. And it wondered, why did Hashem have to stick him in such a place to see such a thing? Okay, later on when he wrote the commentary on Parshas Tetzaveh, so he describes the apron that the Kohen Gadol wears, and describes it as similar to the riding aprons that the noble women wear when they go riding through the country.
Mm-hmm.
So had he not been privileged to see such a thing, he would have made his life harder trying to describe this vestment of the Kohen Gadol. So he understood why it was Hashem had to show it to him. So what kind of free choice did he have? There's no free choice over there. Did he divert his eyes? I'm sure he diverted his eyes, but not fast enough that it didn't bother him. But here's the clincher. What would Rashi say if he was walking down the streets of, say, Oak Park or Southfield on, say, like a summer day?
You mean after he woke up?
I mean, you know, it's just like, the forget about side saddle or front saddle or petticoats, whatever, forms of legs. Halavayit should only be forms of legs that we get thrown at us. You know, but this is the society in which we find ourselves. None of us chose to be born when we were born. Hashem said, this guy is going to be born now. And we're going to put him in this thing. And he wasn't born way back when.
Yes.
Because, okay, it might have been simpler just riding around with a horse. But this guy couldn't function without a smartphone. We got to give this guy a smartphone in order for him to function. Okay? That guy over there in the 900s is going to suffer from cultural shock. His neshama is going to fly right out of his body. He's going to have a nervous breakdown.
Right.
Whatever it is. So Hashem knows his customers and sets it all up. So the amount of free choice that we really have
is very limited.
Is even less than we even think we have.
Very, very limited. Yes.
And Baruch Hashem, we shouldn't really have to come to exercise.
Okay. The question is
our free choice.
That Baruch Hashem you just said.
Yes.
Is that choice? Is that freedom of choice?
Did I just say Baruch Hashem? I'm giving up my freedom of choice.
No.
I just said Baruch Hashem.
Is that freedom of choice?
Well, I wasn't even thinking about it, so the answer is no.
I venture to say maybe that one is, because you the truth is you did think about it a little to say it.
Yeah. Okay.
You know what I'm saying? Maybe.
Okay.
Maybe that is.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Fine. Good. So, it's still nonetheless the idea is we have this vast freedom of choice. We can choose if we're going to do mitzvahs or not.
Yeah. So.
Okay.
So.
Yeah.
Right.
Right. And then you see, for example, did Yehuda have freedom of choice when he passed by Tamar?
Ouch.
Did he? I mean, looking back,
I don't.
Was Peretz supposed to be born the way Peretz was supposed to be born?
Yes.
And was that already known that King, you have a whole Maisa, that Adam Arishan gave up 70 years of his life, right, so that David HaMelech wouldn't be a miscarriage.
Right.
And in the meantime, so who's David HaMelech's progenitor is Peretz. And how is Peretz born? It's only from the Maisa involving Yehuda and Tamar. Right. So Yehuda walks by this woman who he thinks is a prostitute.
Mm-hmm.
And suddenly is overcome with desires that he never had before then and is never going to have after that.
Mm-hmm.
He becomes a total and complete crazy person.
Mm-hmm.
He's so overcome with passion and desire for this woman. And what would have happened had he said, I don't know where this is coming from, but lady, I don't know who you are or what you want, but I'm just going to keep walking. Okay? And what would have happened with David HaMelech? Oh, it would have come some other way.
Exactly.
Hashem would have come up with something else.
Exactly.
And
right.
It would have been predisposed already from the times of Adam Arishan, who had to give him the 70 years already from before.
Yeah, yeah, that's right.
Okay.
It
happened this way, so Yehuda's exercising his free choice over there, whether yes, whether not, very, very small.
Mm-hmm.
Because now what he's done is Hashem says, okay, I'm giving this guy an extra Yetzirah for this woman. Who's going to be able to stand up against such a thing? A David HaMelech with Bathsheba saying, okay, Hashem, test me.
Yeah. Ouch. Ow.
And Hashem say, okay, I'll test you.
And I'll tell you even what it's about.
And I'm going to give you more of a Yetzirah for it, too. Okay? That's one of the other things we say. Lovely day, Nisayon. Don't test us, please. I'm not interested. So this is not to discourage the person, but it is to make the person aware. For sure, they shouldn't get depressed. On the other hand, they shouldn't become flippant.
That's for sure. That's for sure.
I haven't met too many people who are Bainanese. So.
Okay, tell the truth. Have you met any?
I'm not saying. So. So, I can tell you this for sure. Anybody who says I am a Bainany probably isn't, because he's going to be doing a Rabbah on us and hiding the fact that he is a tzaddik and he only thinks he's only a Bainany. I think Rabbah filled that one in already. So, okay, I don't think we necessarily need the label per se, but the there's nobody at the end of the day, when they're doing Kriya Shema Al Mita, who can look back at his day and said, you know, today was an absolutely perfect day. I did everything the best way possible. There is no room for improvement of what I did today. Okay, so what's supposed to happen now? So the person's supposed to get depressed? No. That's not what's supposed to happen. That's not the point. The point is not to kick yourself for shortcomings, however big that, however long that shortcoming might be.
No, big was a good word also.
Okay, so the point is that a person says, well, what am I going to do tomorrow about it?
Exactly.
I've analyzed my day. I see where I'm missing. So tomorrow I'm going to try and fill in the gaps. And we should use those pitfalls as springboards to propel us to an even greater service tomorrow. That's really why we have the freedom of choice.
Yes.
Because even if the cards are stacked against us, Adam in the Garden of Eden, it wasn't stacked against him. The Bnei Yisrael in the Midbar 40 days after Har Sinai with a calf, it wasn't stacked against them. It was for sure. It was a setup in those instances.
Yeah, maybe so.
Why did Adam and Rishon have to get set up? I mean, I flippantly say, well, what kind of book would it have been if Adam would have waited the 3 hours and God would have said, okay, you're allowed into Eden now. Mashiach is here. You got the 5 kids and the book's over. Okay? Would have been a book with one chapter and a little couple of pages afterwards. What kind of story? You couldn't even make a good movie out of it. You know, there's a whole mice with a snake, and they say, snake, go away. And the snake goes away with its tail between its legs. And they go into the Garden of Eden, and they live, yes, and they live happily ever after. Okay? There's no more people that need to be born because their blood's finished. Everything's done.
We got it all fixed.
That's right. So finished. Now there's no Matan Torah. There's no Jewish souls.
Right.
Because Adam, the old, didn't mess up.
Right.
Okay? So it definitely was a setup. Did Adam exercise his freedom of choice? Absolutely. Could Adam have said, no, I'm not going to? Yes, he could have. But what now are the ramifications of that shortcoming of Adam HaRishon? Is we have Avodas HaBirurim and Tikkun Olam. What happened after the Chet HaEgel, with the sin of the golden calf? The Torah is not limited to 6 books of the 5 books of the Chumash and the Sefer Yehoshua. It's expanded to include the whole Torah Shebaal Peh. This is the outcome of it, that it's something that it has to happen. So a person shouldn't say, something really bad happened, and I need to shut down, and I need to be depressed about it. But on the contrary, the person has to say, something bad happened that I have to grow from.
Indeed.
That's what our freedom of choice is. Because now what happens is after the person did something wrong, which was the setup, so now he's got a freedom of choice. Because one of the biggest tools that Yetzer Hara has is depression. It says, the Baal Shem Tov says that there's an Avera which is no Avera, which is worse than any Avera, and that's depression. Because this is like the tool. I have every right to be depressed. I messed up. I ruined the creation. I made it that I tipped the scales the wrong way today, that Mashiach didn't come. Perhaps if I hadn't done this, the scales would have gone the other way, Mashiach would have come, we'd be done, and it's all my fault. So a person has every right and rationale to beat themselves up for it. But that's not our way. That's not Judaism. You want to do that, you have to go become some other religion. Sorry. Our way is to understand, yes, I was put into a place where I should have done such and such. I didn't do such and such, so tomorrow I'm going to be a better person because I know about such and such. And even if it happened that the person messed up 100 times and he says, I can't understand, I always mess up, I always say, I warn myself, I'm not going to mess up, and 100 times I've messed up, no, so 101 times I'll get it right and it'll be that much stronger. And he'll appreciate the 101st time that he didn't mess up and realize how, what a stronger person and a greater character they now have. Okay?
Can you equate what was presented to Adam as these lousy words? Is there a correlation between how Hashem dealt with Paro's heart as to, quote unquote, your words, using your words, Adam was set up? Is there a correlation?
Paro, there's a simple explanation for Paro, that Hashem strengthened his ability to make a decision.
Correct. Because of the overwhelming circumstances.
Correct. Under normal circumstances, Paro would have said, I can't take any more, get out.
Yeah, exactly.
But Hashem made it. He gave him the strength that he could say, no, this is really
make
so,
a choice.
This isn't so bad. I'm going to make a choice and I choose no.
Right.
Okay? Whereas Adam was had, it was like, it was an instantaneous decision. Do I eat this thing? Do I not eat it? Mm-hmm. My wife has eaten it and I'm not going to, or I am going to.
Mm.
Okay, whatever rationale which was flying through his head.
Yeah. So was it a Yetzirah that said eat it?
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. Anything was which it, is... If Chava had eaten it and Adam had not eaten it,
right,
would he have done something wrong?
No, of course not.
No. So the Yetzirah is programmed to get us to do things wrong. So
isn't it programmed to, well, maybe I'm splitting hairs here. Isn't it programmed to see if we will do something wrong?
No.
No?
It's programmed to get us to do things wrong.
To do the wrong thing?
Yeah, we gave the example of the king who hires
the prostitute.
Prostitute to seduce
right.
the son.
Right.
And she's got a job to do. She has to. She's hired to seduce the son, not to try and seduce the son.
Uh-huh.
She's hired to seduce the son.
Uh-huh. I see. Okay. All right. Right here.
Okay. And he says that the language that he gives is, and even though she knows that it wouldn't be such a good thing if she was successful, but still, no, she's got a job. She's hired. She's got to seduce him.
Mm-hmm. I see.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So the whole point is our free choice is that we should be able to grow.
Mm-hmm. Indeed.
Okay, and it is and our relationship with Hashem is much greater than an old man sitting on a chair writing things down in a book. Much greater.
Mm-hmm. Well, I got a lot of growing to do.
Uh huh. So he says, now, Rak Shemashal Zeh, welcome to the club. Rak Shemashal Zeh Eina Ela Lishachasa Ayin. This example of eyes seeing and ears hearing is just so that we can have an easy way of conveying it in Pirkei Avos without having to go through a whole hour explanation when we use the word without so many kiviyachol, so to speak, there. So, Avo be'emes, ein ha-mashal demel ha-nimshal. The example, however, in truth, is no way comparable to the exemplified at all. Ki nefesh ha'adam v'fila ha-sichlis ha-olakis hi mispalus memoria guf v'tzaro machmas hi slavshus ha-mamish b'nefesh ha-chayunis hi slavshus b'guf mamish. The relationship that the body has with the soul has with the body, is that the soul is affected by whatever occurrences happen to the body. It says in the Gemara, a small hole in the body causes a large hole in the soul. A small pain in the body causes a lot of pain to the soul. Why? Because the soul is enclosed in the body. And is therefore, since we use this expression, this relationship of enclosed, we use that verb specifically. Enclosed means a better explanation is if we were speaking in Yiddish. Because in Yiddish, the word is areingetan, which would be translated literally as really put into it. The soul is really put into the body. And is therefore affected by whatever happens to the body. Hot and cold and tired and lack of nutrients. All that affects the soul. Our Kodesh Baruch Hu Enem Ispal Chas V'Sholem Emori Ha'ilam V'Shinoiv. But Hashem, God forbid to say that Hashem is affected by what's going on in the world.
Right.
Because the world doesn't affect any change in Hashem. We have a straight verse he's going to quote soon. Ani Hashem lo shiniti, I didn't change, says Hashem. Before the creation, during the creation, after the creation, right. It didn't affect. And he goes into this explanation, he's talked about at great length, chapter 6 in Shaar Yechud V'Amunah. The relationship, how it is that Hashem wasn't changed. Because before there's no body, before there's no world, now there is a world. Aren't we displacing God by us being here? The answer is no, because God is not an entity which can be displaced. We have this tendency of thinking of Hashem as a noun. But a noun, I mean, as a thing. Hashem's not a thing.
Right.
Hashem is the absolute no thing. Right? Exactly. Okay, so since Hashem is not a, since Hashem is a no thing, you really can't do a whole lot to nothing.
Right.
How much can you affect nothing? Not at all.
Right.
Okay, and now in order for us to understand the relationship that Hashem has with the world, kvar haricha chachmei ha'emes b'sifreim, the stages of the Kabbalah have already gone into great length explaining it in their texts, how it is that Hashem relates to the world. And he says, for our point over here, it's not so relevant, the hows. Mm. At this point, he's interested in that it is that way, not how it is that way or why that is that way. That's not what he's worried about. But he says, because Kol Yisrael ma'aminim b'nei ma'aminim b'lin shu hakira sechel anushi v'aymrim atahu atshel iniver ho'ilam atahu kanal perikhaf. The average Joe doesn't need to go have the explanations. The Kabbalistic insights just get in the way, you might say. Because when it comes to, when you ask a Jew, what do you believe in? And they say, I believe in Hashem. What are they talking about when they say, I believe in Hashem? Hopefully, it's the same I believe in Hashem that a four-year-old says. When a four-year-old says, Hashem, what level of godliness is the four-year-old referring to? The four-year-old isn't referring to levels of godliness because the four-year-old doesn't know about levels of godliness. When the four-year-old says, Hashem, the four-year-old means the very essence of Hashem. Mm-hmm. And that's what the four-year-old believes. And our emunah should stay exactly that. That's the basis of our emunah, and that's what our emunah is. It's the same thing, like an essential Hashem, without any levels and trappings and manifestations and abilities or all kinds of debates and deliberations. Simple, davar pashut, as we would say. A simple entity. Simple meaning not complicated. Because everybody believes there's no way to affect him. So now, hinei kol adam miYisrael yimi yashiyah, every single Jew, no matter, regardless of whom. That means he says everybody. Person can't come up with an excuse and say, you know, this chapter, the last part of chapter 42, it's not relevant to me. That's for people who do such and such, and I don't do such and such, so it's not relevant to me. So he puts in the disclaimer right away. We're closing that loophole. No one can get out of chapter 42. Mm-hmm. It's our obligation. So he says, "Kishi is b'ayin b'zeh shagadol v'chol yom." Whenever a person is going to put their mind to it and meditate for an extended period of time every day. And we mentioned before, two times ago, I think it was, that extended doesn't mean on the clock. Extended means within between your right and left ear. To be able to focus, we said, I've already been saying this, I think, for a month in a row over here, that to be able to focus on 5 minutes a day on Chassidus is a goal.
Yes, it is.
That if a person is going to start davening at 7 o'clock, that from 5 to 7 till 7 o'clock, they should be absolutely doing nothing else except thinking Chassidus is an achievement to work up to.
Indeed it is.
start with 5 seconds and take it from there. See how 5 seconds goes, you know. 5 seconds to seven. Mm-hmm. Think Chassidus straight without thinking about anything else. And it works you up to 10 seconds and then 12 seconds and then the increments are going to get smaller and smaller as you grow. You know, so until finally a person after who knows how long it'll take will be able to sit and think for 5 minutes before davening. That what? Eich shakadosh baruch hu malei mamas es el yoni v'tachteinim v'es ha-shamayim v'es ha-aretz malei kol ha-aretz b'chvaydei mamash. That Hashem is absolutely filling the supernal worlds and the terrestrial worlds, and the heaven and the earth are filled with Hashem's glory. And Hashem is searching and checking out and gazing his kidneys and his heart, all his deeds, all of his speech. Behold, Sada Yisaper, and all the things that happen to him are all the things that are going on. Mm-hmm. So doing that 5 minutes before davening is going to set the pace and the tone for the entire day. Because what happens now is that the person's in the marketplace and he's being bombarded with all kinds of who knows what. But he's already given himself the tools. He said this back in chapter 14. That he doesn't have to sit down and start meditating again in the middle. Wait a minute, I just saw something I wasn't supposed to see. I'm going to stop what I'm doing. I'm going to sit here for 5 minutes and I'm going to meditate on the greatness of Hashem again. Yeah. You would deserve to be fired and it would be rightfully so. Mm-hmm. Because when a person's working, they're supposed to be working. So what's a person supposed to do? He's got his Avodas Hashem, and his Avodas Hashem puts him in a situation which is his work puts him in a place which is contradictory to his Avodas Hashem. And we know what's going to be more important, work or Avodas Hashem. Everybody's going to say, oh, Avodas Hashem. But it just so happens that we have an entire volume of Gemara that deals with what a worker's supposed to do.
Right.
And that also is Avodas Hashem.
Correct.
If it's in the Gemara, it must be holy, right? So going to work is holy. What do you say? That must be, and that makes your boss a really holy dude, right? Yeah.
I don't know about that part.
I'm saying that
tongue in cheek. It just says the work. So, the doing, the me making the effort.
The boss is providing the medium for you to go to work. You know, so he must for you to be holy. So he must be holy himself. You know, so I'm saying it all.
That's up to him. That's up to God.
My tongue is firmly planted into my left cheek.
Here.
Okay.
Here.
So what he's supposed to do? He says, since I did it this morning, I know what I'm supposed to think about right now. If a person focused for 5 minutes, now that he needs to, he can say, well, I know what I'm supposed to be thinking about now that I'm being bombarded with this thing that's not supposed to be bombarded with, that I really don't want to be. Mm-hmm. I can think about what I thought about for 5 minutes mm-hmm. and instantaneously remove his mind and his attitude and his focus mm-hmm. from that which he shouldn't be looking at or being involved with mm-hmm. and hook right up again to where he was at 7 o'clock after 5 minutes of meditating. How long does that take? That takes instantaneously. That's what he says back in chapter 14. Okay, shechai kishyachse v'yizboinim b'zeh afilu v'yizboinim z'kala v'chol esu v'chol shah yi yasur me rav asei teiv b'machshav adivar amaisa. So if he's going to think about it even just for a little amount of time, that which he thought about when he was thinking and sitting and spending time, so then immediately he's going to turn away from doing evil in his thought, speech, and action. And to somehow rebel against the one whose the eyes of his glory filled the earth. As Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai said, we said this back in chapter 30, that your fear of Hashem should equal your fear of man. That just as it is, a person doesn't do anything. When someone's watching, they should always realize that Hashem is watching. And now we understand that it's not to say that Hashem is watching, but Hashem is part of. Mm-hmm. It just so happens, wherever we go, we're taking that divine presence with us. Mm-hmm. That's what he said way back when. It's like taking the head of a king and sticking into a toilet and giving him a swirly. Okay? So that we have this, we have to be conscious of this. This is, and he says, and what is this? This is the starting point. Okay? Some people, it takes effort just to get up to the starting line, right?
Indeed, yes.
Okay, so it takes time. This is what the Pasuk says. The only thing that Hashem says is all you got to do is fear Him in all of His ways. Why is this a lower level? Because all this level of fear is doing is providing the impetus and the stimulation for him not to do anything wrong and to do something good. Meaning the 365 prohibitions not to do them and the 248 positive commandments to do them. For Moshe, that's called a lower level of fear. And for everybody who exercises the das, the connection that they have, which is an innate connection to Hashem, and taps into that and brings that to the forefront and brings it, makes it cognizant, so then the fear of Hashem becomes an easy thing. Okay. So it's not like he says in the first chapter of Tanya that we're not even going to waste a moment of time and we're going to be constantly, if we walk from here to there, we're going to be thinking and talking Torah. That's already the extreme. That's the part where you really got to, like, you know, work on yourself, because in order to do that, you have to know a lot. But how many times did you ever drive by a church and think, I really want to go in there?
Never.
Okay, it doesn't happen to us. We don't have that Yetzirah. Why? Because we have enough. Yetzirah is not bothering us because it's going to know that the thought's going to pop into your head. Hey, there's a church over there. Let me go into it. So your Yetzirah is not going to get any place by doing that, because your Yetzirah is going to go, are you serious? Come on, can't you think of anything better right now? So you pass by a Wendy's afterwards. And you say, oh, bacon cheeseburger. And he's like, a bacon cheeseburger? I never had a bacon cheeseburger in my life. The thought of eating it is repulsive. No, this is not what your Yetzirah does. Okay? Kriya Sotera, the guy next to you, has got a good story you want to hear because he's got a really good job. Oh! They're already, so no. Okay? So, it's what I want to point out over here is we all have some kind of monicum of Yetzirah. We're not wild animals. We do control ourselves. And the Alter Rebbe said, you don't do everything that you want to do. There is nobody alive who does everything that they want to do. You either wind up in jail or in a sane asylum.
Or dead.
Or dead. Okay? Yeah. Right. You know, so. What's that line? There's a line from... what's his name? James Foxworthy, who does the know you're a redneck if. Mm-hmm. You know you're a redneck if you had a relative whose last words were, hey, everybody, look what I could do. Yes, you know.
Yes.
Okay. So, you don't do everything that you want to do. You don't say everything that you want to say. There are so many times in the day when you want to say something, and you just close your mouth, as the expression is, "Bloom pivcha milabdaber." You just shut your trap. You just keep the whole closed over there,
yeah.
And you don't say it. You really want to say it, but you don't, because you know that there's going to be repercussions from it.
Ramifications, yes, indeed.
So he says you could do the same thing with your thought too. It's just like the next step. And when it comes to doing, okay, so there's things that you want to do, you don't do. But then there's things that you want to do, you do, and you shouldn't have done. Mm. But for the most part, if you would put in me, how many heinous things has a person done in the course of their lifetime? Not many, if any at all. We just now got through with the Rambam of all the different punishments for Misa, Bidei Shemayim, and the death at the hands of heaven, and death at the hands of the court, and spiritual excision at age 60. And it gives a whole list of all the different mitzvahs that a person could violate and be charged with such and punished with such punishments. People don't do those things. A normal person doesn't do such things. Such among Jews especially, that, listen, there are 7 billion people on the earth. What percentage of them will, in the course of their lifetimes, never spend a moment inside a jail? 99.999, keep going. So the normal person is not doing any of that stuff. Why? Because they thought, very quickly even, that this is not the right thing to do. Yeah. Okay, they didn't even pay any attention to not doing it, because doing it or not doing it, because it's for them, it's totally completely removed from them that they would never think about doing it. So most of us are, for the most part, almost and absolutely good. All we need, all of us, all we need to be on the level that of the Tanya is just some fine tuning, a little tweaking. What's stopping us? Ourselves. You don't want to. That's as simple as this. Okay, it's a lot easier not to, yes. That's where our Yetzirahs are. Okay, we'll just wrap this up. Shadasu amikasha mitzefaini binas alev albuchinas gile b'machshava k'mamash ki yadu liyadechein. As he knows that das, we've been talking about das the whole chapter over here, is that which connects the hidden aspects of the recesses of the heart to the revealed thought, as is known to those who have sufficed with the study of the esoteric knowledge. Okay, we know what das does. We've been talking about it already for 3 weeks already. We'll just go down to the two dots on the three lines at the top. We see that, for example, that a person is going to think about the fear of the king, which we have trouble relating to this because we don't have kings anymore.
Right.
So, standing in the presence of President whomever, fill in the blank, doesn't turn us into awestruck individuals too scared to move.
Right, sure.
Okay, so he says that the king, his main fear is what's doing on the inside. Okay, when he's expressing himself, when he's exerting his kingliness, that's when people are afraid of him. When he's asleep, for example, he sleeps like anybody else. That's why it was in 1917 when the Bolsheviks wanted to kill Tsar Nicholas III. No one could do it. They gave him gave one guy a pistol and said, "You have the honor of taking out our arch enemy and making the world a better place." Okay, guy went in and got scared and couldn't shoot. And then this happened many times. Until who was the person who assassinated Nicholas III was a Meshuggah. Somebody who didn't have any feeling or understanding of what it was that he was doing.
Right.
That's who they got to do it.
Mm.
The big leaders of the revolution couldn't do it.
Right.
Okay? Because, and that, we should be able to take some of that around with us, and we do take a lot of it around with us. The reason why we're not eating ham sandwiches or putting ourselves in position to be eating ham sandwiches is because we have that much fear of Hashem. We know we really would be better off if we didn't eat that ham sandwich.
Mm.
We are three lines from the top on page Samachal, which is 226, to be continued.